And welcome to everybody on YouTube. It's Off the Hook Overtime. Emmanuel here. Kyle, you make it okay?
Yes.
Rob?
Good evening. Hello.
And Gila?
Hi there.
I understand Alex was called at the last minute to attend the Trump town hall, which is taking place opposite us right now. And priorities are priorities, after all.
I hope he gets his questions out.
Well, somebody's got to take charge. What do you think about that? Right now at this moment, CNN is hosting a so-called Donald Trump town hall in New Hampshire. But what I just found out was that it's not really a town hall because they're only letting Republicans in. So how is this not a Trump rally that CNN is just coordinating?
It's a town you know? Pander.
It's terrible. It's absolutely awful.
No, like I know a lot of mainstream news outlets really miss having their, you know, cash cow of a candidate in office. You know, there was something happening every day, something eye-catching, a headline grabbing every single day.
Look, George Santos got arrested today. Isn't that enough? Come on. It was a good day. We can, you know, we don't need this. Nobody needs this.
Okay, but honestly, define Republican, you know, as far as who they're letting in. I mean, how's that going to go?
Pretty much anybody is allowed at this point.
Well, what is the criteria anymore? Mm-hmm. Do you just say, like, a certain few of the talking points? And, like, is there some kind of fist bump or whatever? I don't know.
No, I think they put swatches up on you, like when they used to do your colors. And if you look okay in red, you can get in.
Oh, okay.
All right, well, that's what's happening right now, and that might be why our listenership is down a bit than what it usually is.
Well, the phone line's open.
Are the phone lines open? Okay, 802-321-4225 is our telephone number in case everybody wants to call us. And if nobody wants to call us, nobody wants to say anything, we'll make it a quick night. That's fine. That's what you can do on YouTube. You can just stop anytime you want.
You can take it.
Yeah. What's going on in the rest of the world? And any news from anybody else?
There is some sad news to share just about a member of the WBAI family. Some of our listeners may know that we had to say goodbye to Tony Ryan, mm-hmm. who was a member of BAI staff for a very long time, hosted the Soul Central station music program, and he passed away about a week ago. And there is a call for help with expenses that is set up by his children. So if any of you out there are able to help with such a thing, go to GoFundMe.com and do a search for Tony Ryan. You'll find the fundraiser for his final expenses. He will be much missed by all of us at BAI.
Absolutely. Yeah, always a friendly face that greeted us whenever we would come by in the studios. Just a kind soul, and
not just there, everywhere. We would see him out and about,
mm-hmm.
Down at protests or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He'd bring I remember seeing him with a guitar, I think.
Wow.
Walking around one, just recognize us, acknowledge us, you know, friends from the control room, that kind of thing, in the hallways, getting fun premiums to people and stuff, and.
Yeah,
and you know, all the things it takes to do the community radio thing, and he was so dedicated. He was great.
Yeah, Rob, any other news? Did you go to the meeting this week?
I did. It was very well populated. A lot of older faces that have not been to the 2600 meetings in a long time have been showing up lately, and it's really nice to see people, catch up with them. You know what you've been up to for the past 20 years. And it is all around a good time. I am always happy to go. I'm always mm-hmm. happy to speak with people, and it's always just a very refreshing and fulfilling experience.
Yeah, Gila, you're making a a face of possible contradiction there, or
I smiled.
Oh, okay.
I heard it was lovely. I was not able to be there, but I heard it was lovely, and I'm looking forward to the June meeting. That is all.
Yeah. And the June meeting, of course, as all 2600 meetings take place on the first Friday of the month, usually about 5 p.m., but starting times can vary. Go to 2600.com/meetings to see what time the meeting in your area starts. And if you don't have a meeting in your area, there are instructions on how you can start one. And what is a 2600 meeting? It's not, you know, a meeting with an agenda people sitting in chairs and raising their hands and anything like that. No, it's basically a gathering where you talk to the people you want to talk to. You meet people. You stay as long as you want. It's very informal. And, you know, hearing from people who have gone to meetings over the years, say from the 80s or 90s, you realize how much that meant to people. You know, we had Space Rogue on here a bunch of weeks ago talking about how in the early days of the Loft, 2600 meetings were how people got together. I had no idea that it carried that kind of weight, but it really is, it's something to realize how much it means for people just to be able to get together. And that's why we continue to do the Hope conferences. It's just something important for the hacker community, and it is such an incredible community. Always giving back, always building, always being creative, and happy to be a part of it. All right, I believe we have a phone call. Do we have a phone call, Kyle?
Yeah.
Okay. The phone number for future reference is 802-321-4225. The 4225, of course, spells hack. And good evening. You are on Overtime.
Hi there. Great topic at the beginning, and I'm going to expand on that. Well, Alex has made some questionable choices in the past, whom I called him on online on this forum, and this seems to be another one. But I think it's an historical moment because this may be the very night when Trump becomes radioactive, and we will know if, as I predict, in this very moment, and thank you for producing the Satori that made me realize this, CNN, which is already in trouble, is finally auctioning off its credibility for a very limited return. Its ratings are going to go down in the drain, mm-hmm. I believe. And, Alex unknowingly is going to witness the beginning of the end of CNN. I think that, you know, it's not just a verdict per se, it's the whole momentum is finally turning around against Trump because people are starting to realize, and CNN is performing a public service.
Hold on a second. Was that Alex on camera just now? Did we just see him?
He's waving his arm.
No, I think I saw him in the crowd. I mean, he might be... Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, so you're doing both things.
No.
Okay, so...
No, we just have the picture on. If a friend of ours is at a major event like this, you kind of want to see, you know, maybe he'll take the stage.
Oh, okay.
He'll be the one to keep Trump from attacking somebody else. You know, he might be the person to save someone's life.
I doubt it.
Well, he'll put himself in the line of fire like that. He's like that. He's a stand-up kind of a guy. And Trump is easy to tackle, too.
Okay, we'll find out. But, you know, I think one thing that won't be lacking there is pro-Trump security of all kinds. So I hope Alex doesn't get in trouble in that regard. But he's a lawyer. He knows what's what, at least in terms of what is...
That's right.
What is legal and what's not legal. And, depending if he's looking for publicity or not, I don't think he's going to do anything hazardous, whichever way you want to put the accent. But... No, I really believe that, the tide is turning, and the people who have been profiting, especially in the media, following the, so to say, Trump phenomenon, I've been in New York more than 40 years, and I remember when I first arrived and people were talking about this, so to say, young Scion, he was in his 30s then, this dubious real estate tycoon, his father, who was trying to build on Fifth Avenue. I forget if he evicted Gimbel's from Fifth Avenue or some other big name department store, but I think it might have been Gimbel. And he started to build this eponymous tower, which is, just... reflects his value, glitz everywhere, value nowhere, except for in the rent he charges. And location, location, location. That's really the philosophy of the guy, which I found, you know, I found basically as a recent immigrant back then, I found the, how can I say, the excess of all what's wrong about American society. And it was very clear to me ever since. I might have already said on this program that to my great surprise, once I was in his presence, and in spite of my, I wouldn't call it hatred, but insufferance towards that character and what he represents, he makes you feel good when you are, you know, in the same room. And I was very surprised, and I said, look, I really can't stand the guy, but I have to give him this. He does have charisma.
Wait, so hold on a second. You were in the same room as Trump.
As yes, Trump. You know,
and he made you feel good.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes, he has this quality about him. You know, we were at a restaurant, literally 4 or 5 yards away at separate tables. He was entertaining his.
You could have hit him with a dinner roll easily, right?
I could have. Okay. Well, you know, in an ideal world, if this had been the Matrix, I dreamt of going back to the same place, you know, shooting him and then making off and in a phone booth and you know, and being interviewed by the police and saying, "Oh, the guy looked exactly like me."
Yeah, that's going over the line, but yeah, we all have our dreams,
fantasy,
I suppose.
I mean, exactly. Yes, yes, yes.
Can we move the subject to something other than this guy? Because I just brought it up just for fun at the top of the hour.
No, and you did right. But I really think it's a pivotal moment in that, you know, mark my words, and maybe I will be proven wrong, but I think that CNN has crossed the line, and considering the fact that, you know, at least in their rhetoric and in their PRs, they have appealed to sensible audience, people will really count on them today.
Well, what I found out recently, and I was surprised by this, is that MSNBC has far higher ratings than CNN. I thought it was the other way around. And I found MSNBC to be a lot more palatable recently. First of all, they have about half as many commercials. CNN is always having commercials, and I turn them on. And they're not trying to both sides everything. You know, I could see if it was a race, you know, Biden versus Trump, if that's what it turns into, Trump is going to get some airtime. But that's not the case, not yet anyway. In this particular case, you have many people that are saying they're going to run or they're thinking about running. So to give this guy all of this free attention and then on top of that, to simply exclude anybody who might criticize him so that it's only Republicans in the room with him, or independents that are likely to vote Republican. That's insane. I don't know what kind of, those are the terms Trump insisted on. And because of that, he is running the show. He is literally running the show. And he went to CNN and not Fox for something like this. That's very telling.
Well, you said it yourself. My question is rhetorical. Where is the both-sidism? In other words, where is the other side? And so, you know, their pretense of being the objective, the thinking network, is total crap. And this shows it for what it is. I mean, they have already showing it, and that's why their attendance, so to say, is down. But it's going to be much lower, because I think what they're doing is an unashamed play for Tucker Carlson hour, you know, because I'm not sure about this, but I think he went on at the same time. Not having a TV, I will never know. But I think he went on at this time. So it's like saying, hey, Trumpers, you are missing your frontman? We'll bring you the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And come what may. And what may, you know, maybe they did actually do... although I think even the advertisers are a little more sophisticated, not in terms of politics, but in terms of simply saying, who are we selling to? How many people are really going to watch? And what are we selling to whom? You know, considering also the very short notice, I don't know that it's going to be such a fantastic commercial return on this. Quite the contrary. So it will be really interesting to see. But I think that, you know, with this, they lose to any claim of objectivity that they might have ever had. And as I said, they were already wobbling in terms of credibility, but this is really a watershed moment. And not just for CNN, because a lot of people are starting to realize, and I'm talking middle-of-the-road people, not, you know, Trumpers or die-hard pink Democrats, or that, you know, this has all been about ratings. We, you know, this wreck of a personality, aside from his charisma, was wrought over us by advertisers, or not the advertisers, but the people who pander to the advertisers, the media, saying, oh, this sells. Hey, do you want to buy some space here? We're having this clown that is running for president. And the joke, unfortunately, became not very funny once he got, quote, elected. Because, you know, as I like to say, he's still convinced he won in 2020. And he has an argument, because he lost in 2000. Well, he didn't lose, right? Technically, he won. But this is the only country in the world where you wind up with 3 million less votes than your opponent, and you're the winner. Everywhere else, you're called the loser. But here, you're the winner. So he says, wow, this time I got even more votes less. I got 8 million less, so of course I am.
In fairness, though, there are other countries that do it similarly to us, like Belarus, North Korea, places like that, where no matter
I'm
how
so
many votes
you
get,
you
will never win. Cradles
of democracy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
North Korea and Belarus, some of the most lauded democratic countries in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So there we are. We're on the same level, the same system as North Korea and Belarus. Thank you for pointing that out.
Well, it's logical, unfortunately. Anything else before we move on to another call?
No, that's great. I'm glad someone else called, so I hope I started the ball rolling. Enjoy, and thank you so much for all your work.
Thank you for your call. Take care.
All the best.
Bye-bye. Did someone else call? How would he know if someone else called? And we only have one line. So
the line is now open.
The line is now open,
yeah.
And the phone number remains 802-321-4225. Yes, Gila.
Well, while we wait for the next call, we did have an update on a news story from last week.
Oh, tell us.
Yes. Last week when we spoke about the fact that Pornhub decided that it was just blacking out in Utah in response to the new law that went into effect a week ago today.
I forgot to VPN to Utah to try and log on to Pornhub. I forgot to do that.
Interestingly enough, the governor, we're looking at a story on TechDirt right now. The governor is said, cool, that's great. You don't want to be here. We don't want you here. Get out. The guy who sponsored the bill was like, I didn't know this was going to happen. This is shocking. What are you saying? But then, wait, it gets better. The public affairs arm, the trade group, of the adult entertainment industry is suing the state of Utah on First Amendment grounds.
Okay.
And they say that, all right, check it out. The act violates the First Amendment in several respects, violates the 14th Amendment, and violates the Equal Protection Clause. I found this very interesting. The act's exemption of certain news organizations draws impermissible content-based distinctions among persons engaged in free speech, violating the Equal Protection Clause. So, will be interesting to see where this goes. But yes, I did think it was very interesting that Utah is now being sued over this new law.
Interesting. Now, you said the guy who sponsored the bill seemed surprised by what's happening. It almost sounded like he was kind of regretting it, but why would he?
Oh, no. So, okay, he said to Ars Technica, when I ran the legislation last February, I didn't expect adult porn sites to be blocked in Utah. Not at all. Then he spoke to a local TV affiliate and said they're complying with Louisiana's law, which is essentially the same, so I expect they'll eventually comply with Utah's as well. And then he told the LA Times, I think this is a strategy. They're trying to put the pressure on me and other legislators to repeal this, and I don't think that's going to work. So he's just basically playing all sides with this response right now. But yes, there is an official legal challenge to it, and I will be interested to see where we go from here.
Interesting. Any of our listeners in Utah would like to let us know if this is something they're aware of or if it's affecting them in any way, please either write to us, oth@2600.com, or call us, 802-321-4225. And we'll leave the phone lines open for another couple of minutes, see if anyone else is out there. Yes, Kiva.
Also, I had another, which has nothing to do with porn, but it does have something to do with what we talked about earlier, which is the local, the transit in Pittsburgh. The husband of one of my best friends is now obsessed with Pittsburgh, so we're all talking about it a lot. And in Pittsburgh, they have the light rail, which is great, but they also have inclines. They have the oldest funicular railroad in the country.
Funiculars are great.
Is in Pittsburgh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, how would you describe what that is to somebody who doesn't know?
If I'm not mistaken, it is a rail car that, like, climbs up the outside of a mountain.
Pretty much.
And it terrifies me conceptually. I'm definitely afraid of heights. But I did think it was an important thing to mention that in addition to buses and light rail, the Pittsburgh Municipal Transit Organization is in charge of these two funicular railroads.
There's one in Quebec City, which is also really impressive. And
there's a bunch throughout Europe.
Lisbon, yes. They're all over the place. Not so many in the States. I wish there were more.
Used to be a bunch more.
Wow.
Both around and in Pittsburgh, but...
Again, 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. Give it another couple of minutes. Hey, it's going to be...
funicular.
Early night for us. That'd be kind of a welcome... Well, not having Alex, of course. people don't want to call when Alex isn't here because there's nobody to argue with.
Well, it's Alex's own fault. I mean, he was all excited to go to the... the cybersecurity gathering of the Juggalos or...
I think that's what it was.
And he didn't bring us with him, so, you know, that's what we
got. Something disturbance, yeah.
I mean, is it like disruption con or something? How do you schedule for that? I have so many questions.
Yeah, I guess.
You schedule at the same time as another event that's going on, and you just barge in on it.
I guess that qualifies, yeah, that makes sense.
That or just think edgy thoughts.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
The phone line is still open.
Is it?
Well,
it is no longer
open. It's ringing now, though. shall we accept this call?
We're all so excited. Yes, let's accept it. Please.
Good evening. You're on All Talk Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Johnny Fusion.
Hey, Johnny Fusion. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Okay, that's good to hear.
I want to talk a little bit about this Bard business going on with Google that you talked about on the radio.
Yes, Bard. Boy, that's going to be something.
You know, and, you know, my latest article, I talked a little bit about AI, but I didn't, you know, I talked about it, you know, more about how it's impacting creatives, and we have the... you know, the Writer Guild strike right now, and that's one of the points about not having AI written scripts and stuff. You know, they don't want to be replaced by AI writers. You know, but with search results, as you said, these things hallucinate. They make up crap all the time. Because, you know, they're called AI because they use kind of like this neural net for these large language models, but they're not really intelligent. They're not doing cognition. You know, they're not really self-aware at all. They're just following grammar and syntax.
Yeah, I was just going to say playing with the syntax. In a nonsensical way, but in a way that fits structurally from pattern recognition, really, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it appears to make sense because their data set is so large. I mean, they're called large language models. I think people don't really realize what the large really means. I mean, these are like petabytes of sample text.
yeah.
that they're drawing from.
Every way of saying things in every kind of context and on any different kind of subject matter, yeah.
Yeah, even when we say petabytes, that doesn't, like, people don't fathom how large that actually is. You know, it's just like, and it's multiples of petabytes. You know, it's like, it's literally everything on the internet ever. And it's ridiculous amounts of information with no understanding. It's basically black boxing language.
Yeah, absolutely. It was well described in a discussion that I saw on Mastodon yesterday, which described it as snapping together word Legos and random strings that happen to make smooth shapes. This was by someone called Mikey at Soylent.Green on Mastodon, basically describing this as, this is a text sequence extender. It doesn't lie. It doesn't learn. It's basically just slaps things together that seem to fit based on what it knows about language. It doesn't know the facts. It doesn't know if things are correct or incorrect. It is just very able to put together a confident-sounding sentence. It was further described as, you're not learning anything, you're arguing with a distorted echo.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, it's basically a magic trick, right? It's just Eliza writ large,
yes.
You know?
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
Eliza being the very first AI chatbot, you know, which was written in BASIC, run on very primitive hardware. Like, I had a copy of Eliza on running on the Apple II, right, with 16 kilobytes of RAM. You know, well, the Apple II Plus had 16 kilobytes. That was the upgrade, right?
Mm-hmm.
Loaded off a cassette tape. You know, and it used tricks to talk like a therapist.
Yes.
You know, and I think it was invented in the 60s or 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And computer scientists would talk to this program for hours. You know, maybe that talks to something about, you know, the mindset of computer nerds. And how lonely we are for interaction, that we would talk to a primitive program for hours. But, you know, these large language models are just a more convincing illusion of this. But there's no there, you know, which is, and it's unfortunate because it rose with the same time with these art programs, which I think shows real creativity, you know, which is a whole different phenomenon, because this has interactive neural nets that actually does show understanding of language, because it's taking language and interpreting it artistically, even though, I don't know, it's just like playing with the art generator, you know, there's just some creepy things. Maybe I'm falling for the illusion with the art stuff, but, you know, with people that have worked with it, you know, it seems to be a real creativity, because there's things that it's creating that weren't in the original data sets, you know.
Even then, and on the subject of the visual art AI, as a visual artist myself, I have some feelings about that. But I wanted to bring it back to you. You mentioned Eliza, and it was created in the 1960s, and it was so persistent, and it blew people's minds at the time, because people didn't, you know, have the experience of talking to a computer in sentences and getting sentences back, so much so that people basically being fooled by a computer conversation and attributing human characteristics to it is now known as the Eliza effect. And I encourage anyone listening to look into this if you haven't. It's Eliza spelled with a Z, and you could just look that up on Wikipedia and find the software. And it is a really fascinating piece of history.
Already been examples, I think, in some of the interviews and the like employees that were working that were let go in the Google case. But a lot of different stories I've seen from local news and I think even Vice had one recently. It's kind of scary when they talk to people who've like had strong connections with these things. You kind of are sympathetic on one hand, and you're like, how did this unravel? Like, how did you let it get to this? Or how did you spend so much time and becoming so absorbed in this? But I think, like Johnny said, the geekiness, I guess the intrigue and isolation maybe to a degree also, and trying to find an affinity groups or people that get you, that this might
right,
be
plus,
a diversion, a useful one.
Plus the perfect storm of isolation during the pandemic.
Oh, that too,
you
yeah.
Know, this period of time is the perfect, you know, it's like the perfect storm for this technology to arise where everybody's isolated, you know. So.
Yeah, but it's a built-in need.
Yeah. But, you know, and with the, you know, and then, you know, there's the whole phenomenon of the replica AI, which they market as a romantic partner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where they literally market into that loneliness. And then there, a month or two back, there was like a whole thing where Italy said, hey, this isn't safe, and they walked it back, and then there was outcry from the rest of the world, and these people that were, I would say, addicted to their relationships with their replica girlfriends and boyfriends.
Yeah, that was the Vice story I was thinking about. They were covering that story you're talking about, and
yeah. You know, and so they slowly turned it back on without much fanfare. And if you ever want to go down the rabbit hole, all you have to do is look at the replica subreddit on Reddit. And that's all I'm going to say about that. I mean, you can look for yourself, you know, because there are people there that are really into it.
Yeah, and there was also an issue last year, I believe one quarter, we ran a story on Replica. I think someone was talking about that in one of the articles.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, it's good hearing from you. Please
yeah,
keep
good
us
hearing.
Updated.
Good talking.
Keep writing articles, and we hope to hear from you again soon.
Yeah, you know, and you know, I'm thinking about writing some more. I was gonna branch out. I was gonna branch out and write for StarTrek.com because they pay. But I'm gonna show some solidarity for the Writers Guild and hold off, even though it's not technically TV, but they're, you know, a TV company. So I'm gonna show some solidarity. I mean, it'll keep Star Trek and AI not going anywhere.
Right.
So, looking for other avenues.
Well, you can always write. You just, you know, just don't release it to anybody who could benefit from it. But, you know, you're not breaking any rules by just writing, you know, to yourself.
True enough, but how they work, you know, they don't want finished essays. They want pitches, and then you write it. Is how they work.
That's true.
So I'm not going to pitch till the strike's over to them. But I might publish on Medium or, you know, this, you know, or other zines or stuff that's not owned by CBS Paramount or not owned by studios. And of course, I'll still be writing for the magazine as soon as inspiration hits.
Okay. Look forward to seeing what you come up with.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
All Bye.
You know, it's interesting. The writer's strike, which is going on right now, one of the major concerns is artificial intelligence, you know, ChatGPT. And I just wonder, what specifically is artificial intelligence doing in the TV movie writing world that is affecting human writers? Are they actually, you know, scripting TV shows and movies? Rob, do you know something about this?
A little bit. Basically, it's not that it's being done right now in the field of mainstream TV and movies, but it's that it will be. And it's TV and movies, it's the TV and movie industry, those who do the work for once wanting to get out ahead of something like this, because any AI that would be writing like a Star Trek episode or whatever else would be doing it by being trained on the writings of human writers. And this is about those human writers wanting to be able to say, don't use my stuff to train a robot to take my job away from me.
Especially in the attempt of the studios wanted to continue to use existing IP so you can, you know, continue writing another Star Wars movie until the end of time. So one of my favorite signs I've seen a picture of so far says AI didn't have childhood trauma.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very interesting. But no, they were moving New York area members of all the guilds today to try to block some filming locations.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, the fact that the writers said we want specific discussions about how AI will be used going forward, and the AMPTP said we'll have one meeting a year to talk about it.
Wow.
Going forward.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that it's an interesting sort of situation.
I'm wondering, can we get ChatGPT or Bard or any of those entities to promise not to do anything that would hurt somebody who was on strike? Right? I don't know how to ask the question. I don't know how to specifically phrase it, but I would like to get them on record saying, yes, I won't be a scab.
I mean, they can say it all they want, but yeah, as we know, what they say doesn't mean a whole lot. But it's also interesting, a couple weeks, months ago, what is time? Alan Alda did a whole episode of his podcast where he was just interviewing different AI robots, basically,
mm-hmm,
and had them then spoken by different voiceover bots the same way that you have done, Emmanuel. But the thing that he did that you didn't do was ask one of the AI bots to write a new episode of MASH, and then he and Mike Farrell read it on his podcast. And it was bad. It was AI still doesn't get humor, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
AI, as we have discovered, is unfunny. So, you know, it was interesting to listen to that happen. But, you know, to have those pieces come back, I thought was interesting.
Wow. Go ahead, Kyle. We have a call. Okay, good evening. You're on Off Talk Overtime. Go ahead.
Yes, hi.
It's Rebel. How you doing, Rebel?
Good. Let's see. Hold on. Let me get my notes.
You have notes? Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, of course.
I'm honored that we're deserving of notes. That's great. Maybe
okay,
other callers
yeah
could have notes, too, so that we don't stray off topic. But you do stray off topic. You stray off topic more than anybody. So your notes, well, stick to your notes. How about that?
Okay. Yeah. You know, do you ever call, like, if you ever had to call the phone company, like Verizon or something, like 1-800-Verizon to, like, to if you, like, then they still have to call the business office if you had a problem with your bill or a question or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, I guess I won't call and demonstrate it or demonstrate it over the air. But what it does is that if you don't say anything, well, maybe I should demonstrate.
No, you shouldn't. It's not a good
okay
idea.
But if you don't say anything, it says, your call may be monitored to train our systems and representatives,
mm-hmm,
meaning they're training their AI, they're training their AI now.
Well, they're training their students, the newcomers. And I guess that could be synthetic.
No, the representatives,
newcomers.
Yeah, they're training the representatives, but they're training, they have artificial intelligence now.
That's true. So maybe artificial intelligence is listening in. You don't know.
Yeah, and if you don't push button, like if you don't have a touch tone phone, you know, it just hangs up. It just says, "We're sorry you're having problems. You may want to try again later," or something like that.
It's very literal. You're having problems in not embracing the technology they want you to embrace, and maybe try later when you've learned how to do that. That's what they're saying.
Yeah, and, you know, many 800 numbers of the past, like I listened to some of the old off-the-hook shows, like what you call an 800 number of some sort, like, you know, you'd call some 800 number back in, like, the 90s or something. Mm-hmm. I try calling the, you know, the same 800 number. It's the same thing. It just goes to the same recording that says, you know, please listen carefully for this special offer or whatever, something like that.
Is it an offer from the 1990s?
I don't know. But I should 521 core. You know what? Maybe I will demonstrate something. Would you like to hold?
Is it really necessary, Rebel? Let's make this fast then. Let's pull that Band-Aid off. Come, go ahead.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Again, being put on hold by the callers.
He raises a good point though. Like if you're talking to a billing system or you're talking to something that's handling customer info, and it got a back-end sort of modularized version of one of these machine learning
things. Financial group, Think Cloud.
What happens to your
Sorry,
personal info?
Sorry, I could not find this option. to reach Ryan Scott, what... press 2.
Okay, this is
Sorry,
what
I could
before.
Not find this option.
Is she responding to us?
To reach Ryan Scott. Sorry, I could not find this option.
This is not what it was doing before.
Never is. That's why
Sorry,
we don't.
Sorry, I could not find this option.
Demonstrate things on the air like this.
To reach Ryan.
Did you find this option before?
Sorry, I could not find this option. Sorry, I could not find this option.
In other words.
Sorry, I could not find this option.
Oh, this is
okay,
this
I don't
is entertaining
hang up
radio.
On this
Sorry, I could not find this option.
I don't want to hang up on this because it's just it's not going to
Sorry,
hang up.
I could not
you
find
want
this
to hang
option.
Up. Why don't you want to hang up on this?
Sorry, I could not find this option.
You can hang up on us. You know, I'm willing to take that risk.
Sorry,
you know, I
cannot
find
this
option.
This Rebel is a special kind of hell that you've never brought to us before.
They give you 20 megabytes of...
Sorry, I could not find this option.
Like tethering?
To reach...
You know, tethering?
Is there a button I can press?
Yeah, tethering.
Yeah, they give you 20 gigabytes or megabytes or something. And then they don't, you know... I used to have like 50 megabytes or 50 from Sprint. Now it's like T-Mobile now. It gives you 20 megabytes now. And then you know what it does? When you know, it goes to like 28.
Sorry, I could not
find
this
back. Rebel, you're going to have to get rid of your friend here. She's driving me crazy.
Well, I don't know.
Sorry, I could not find this option.
You're responsible for her. You brought her into this conversation. You got to take her out.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you get rid of her?
No. Yeah.
All right. She's not coming back, I hope.
I
don't think it's a good idea for you to connect to something on the air. Was I not proven right? Yeah. Maybe next time, if you'll listen.
When you get 28, it gets to 28.8.
He's not
like,
going to listen.
It gets to 28.8 when after 20 megabytes of free tethering.
Okay.
What are you going to tether for 20 megabytes of today?
I fell like off this conversation a while back when
20 megabytes for is it 20 megabytes or 20 gig? I think it's 20
it's
megabytes.
Gigabytes.
Maybe it's terabytes. Who
gigabytes
knows?
Gigabytes per month.
Wireless carrier like T-Mobile, they will throttle you after you go over a certain amount, and it becomes incredibly slow. And that's a terrible thing, especially if you're traveling.
Yes.
Happened to us. Always good to have a backup. This is one of the reasons, you know, having a prepaid or a local cell phone.
Yeah, but 28.8, hello, we're not in the 90s.
It's crazy, you know, they really do. They throttle, it's punishment. They're so overbearing about it. Some carriers will give you warning, fair warning and all of that. So I really, I
I feel for you. That's why it's good to look for Wi-Fi, too.
Some warn you when you're at 90%, and that's not much time for you to change your habits and avoid being throttled.
Right, but then you get 50, you get Sprint, you get 50 megabytes per month.
Oh, this is something seven. This is something worth comparing and maybe publicizing a little bit, saying how many megs or gigs or terabytes or whatever you get for each phone company.
Yeah, and
but then it could be down to 20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know T-Mobile was offering unlimited data, but is that 2G rates? And that is ridiculous.
No, 5G, it's unlimited data when you're on your phone, but not when you're using your phone as a tethering thing.
Yeah.
When the speeds were much slower, unlimited and larger packages seemed much more... They had less control over the devices in some ways, as far as turning features on and off, the granularity, of course. And there was less high bandwidth content. It would have mainly been sort of like email and communications and so forth. So as it sort of shifted, the control over a lot of that stuff, whether you can become a hotspot, whether you can tether, that's changed too. And a lot of that is the upgrades and changes in handsets, allowing them to program and set the terms of their network.
What a lot of people,
it feels like punishment in a lot of ways.
Well, a lot of people swear by and swear at, actually, our cable companies, but they do have hotspots all over the place, and if you log into one of those, you get pretty high speeds. If you don't have a cable account, you can always borrow somebody's password. Oftentimes, it's not that big a deal to share that, and then you can go virtually anywhere in the area and always be assured of some kind of a connection.
Right, but then they don't have touch tone service. Like when I now you get like you know, they don't get the touch tone service after like a few minutes. You know, because now I when I make a call, it like takes so long to dial now because you only get they give you touch tone service for so many calls a month. Now you don't get
hold on a sec. Who's cutting off touch tone service?
Sprint, a piece of T-Mobile. If you like a certain amount of minutes, you know, they give you pulse dialing.
Hold on a sec. On your cell phone, you're getting pulse dialing? Is this some kind of a joke?
You get a pay per month. You know, if you want, I called them about this. They said, oh, you can get, for an extra $10, you can get the...
You're making fun of us, aren't you? There's no such thing as pulse dialing on a goddamn cell phone. I'm sorry.
Well, then why we have 28.8 connections on a tethering?
I don't know, but it's not related to this.
Because it's data. It's a different part of the baseband, or maybe it's the same.
Can I ask part of the phone. How are you expected to make a rotary phone call on a cell phone that doesn't have a rotary dial? Yeah, think about that.
Let's see. 1-800. Oh, let's demonstrate 1-800-MAYANIS.
No more demonstrations.
No,
oh, my God.
I think we've revoked your permissions.
Yes. Rebel, one final thing from you, and then we're going to move on.
Okay. Next month. Okay, let's see. Well, next week I'll be here, but. Next, I'm going to Russia in...
You're going to Russia again?
Are you coming back?
Wait. You went to Russia in the middle of the war last year, and you got away with that. Now you're going back?
I'm going to St. Petersburg.
Well, that's Russia, so yeah, you're going back. beautiful city, but boy, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it's a good idea, but I said that last time. You didn't listen, so what can I do?
Well, and I had a great time last time, so...
Now, if you had a great time once, you know you're going to have a great time every time, so I can't argue with that kind of logic. So when do you go?
June 1st, for like maybe 10 days.
Let's hope it's 10 days. Go to Finland, yeah. If you're going to go to St. Petersburg,
go through
Finland.
You can't, because they're not doing the ferry thing. Otherwise, I would.
What ferry? What, from Estonia?
Oh, no, all the way to Estonia and all this. I don't know
where the ferry is. The only ferry I know of is between Estonia.
There used to be a ferry from St. Petersburg to...
No, why would there be a ferry? It's a land route. You can take a train. I'm sorry, what? You can take a train from Helsinki to St. Petersburg. It gets a little contentious at the border, but once you get past that, everything's fine.
I don't know if they're going there now. But
they might not. They might have canceled that because everyone's angry. But, yeah, I don't know of a ferry that goes between the two cities. That would be... But Finland is a great place to visit.
Yeah, I'd like to go visit. And maybe next year I'd like to go visit Ireland and Sweden. Not Sweden. Switzerland and Italy and...
Yeah, just do it in the right order, because otherwise you're bouncing all over Europe.
Well, yeah, that's true. I go to Ireland first, because that's closer. Uh-huh. Then I go to, you know, England, and then to, like, Switzerland, and then in Italy. So, mostly numbers give you the same recording, you know, like 1-800, like my ANI is. Uh-huh. You know, it gives you the same recording. I forgot what it is. You want to hold, and I'll,
Someone else answer him. He's not
no,
here.
No, we're not playing this game anymore. But you can call and find out your ANI.
Wait a minute.
But we're going to keep ours to ourselves.
Let me see.
Glad you're having fun with us, though.
Yes.
800 MY. I'll do it. Do it on the computer then.
All right, then. So it's been good hearing from you, Rebel. We're going to move on. Thank you for your call. And please, won't you call back again? All right.
Hey.
Have a good night. I had this this exchange. While that was going on, I was multitasking. I was doing some other things. I specifically asked Bard if they would basically promise not to replace a striking Hollywood worker, or a writer, rather. Would you like to hear the response I got?
Sure.
It's quite intriguing. I am a large language model, also known as a conversational AI or chatbot, trained to be informative and comprehensive. I am trained on a massive amount of text data, and I'm able to communicate and generate human-like text in response to a wide range of prompts and questions. For example, I can provide summaries of factual topics or create stories. I do not have the ability to replace a striking Hollywood writer. I am not a writer, and I do not have the skills or experience necessary to create high-quality content. I am also not affiliated with any Hollywood studios or production companies, so I would not be able to offer any work to striking writers. Not exactly what I asked, but okay. I support the striking Hollywood writers, and I hope that they are able to reach a fair agreement with the studios. I believe that the writers are essential to the creation of high-quality content, and they deserve to be compensated fairly for their work. Kind of surprised to hear Bard saying that about striking Hollywood workers, but Bard seems to be up to date on the strike, or maybe that's just a canned phrase that Bard will always say about striking writers or striking anybody.
Well, it's also a matter of just, it found that text somewhere out there. It seems like text that would fit in a response to this particular query, but Bard, being a large language model, is a computer program. It does not support anything. It does not believe anything. It doesn't get pissed off. It doesn't, you know, fall in love. It just runs programs. And so even reading a response like that, it's playing at more humanity than is actually going on.
Yeah, and I think the conversation we had earlier with Rebel, it kind of got me thinking about this, too. Is like, it's about how people are using it and who exactly is using it. So you're using it, and it's responding that way because you've prompted it. Someone else could prompt it and get something entirely different for an entirely different end, based on a wholly different subject matter, and Bard isn't going to take a stance or be in solidarity in any way. And the scenario that Rebel brought up got me intrigued, because we might individually be warned by Google or ChatGPT, that there are different projects, different degrees of willingness and capability to have certain conversations or divulge certain things. And the idea that was raised about customer service and companies hooking this up. Now, there's no evidence. We don't have a story about that necessarily. But like I mentioned earlier, the ability to add this to things that are already like IVR systems or home assistants, stuff we talk to, is not totally like out of the realm of possibility at this point. It's kind of just sort of waiting to be snapped in, so to speak. So my point, companies that implement this, they want to cut costs. Their impetus is mostly out of an organizational an ability to have customer retention and basically maximize the human resources they do have as they scale up and provide a good or service en masse. And they'll use this, if it is integrated someday into customer service, they'll use this with their goals in mind, not necessarily the same goals when you're signing the agreement using it personally. So I'm kind of intrigued by that, like, third-party use. Like, you're talking to it, giving it personal info to pay your utility bill or do something, but how well are they containing it? If their goal isn't the same as, like, when you agree personally, their goal is to use it in ways, and, you know, how much resources then, if their goals are being met, how are they not implementing things that actually, like, safety and security protocols? And even if they did say they were implementing it, how could they even guarantee it if it's being loaded up with account numbers and personal identifiable information and so on and so forth? So it just occurred to me in that conversation that how you use it and who's using it, but the info becomes part of data sets anew and retrains and as it refines it going forward. So it just seems like it may be easy for them to implement, but it's hard to use in a safe way. And just this example is one scenario. Imagine all the different companies and places that might be trying to save on human customer service or something like that, and all of a sudden all these different ways you might ordinarily have a private conversation are instead being integrated into this large language network of neural network and so forth. We have no more calls. Sorry, I just checked.
Okay. Well, that's fine with me, because we're just about at the end of this hour.
Is it? Yeah, we're... Yeah.
Any closing thoughts from people?
Just keep your eyes open. Be aware of what's going on when you talk to a computer. You're not talking to a human. You're not talking to a mind. Use things that are fun and stop doing them when they stop being fun.
Yes, and don't expect anyone else to agree with you.
I would say get spring projects together in addition to that.
That's right.
Hack some stuff, mm-hmm. things you've been putting off.
Mm-hmm.
Get to it. Get to work. There's lots to do, and it'll keep you away from the artificial intelligence.
I have an audio cassette I have to fix, so I'm looking forward to that project. Is that a spring project?
Absolutely.
All right, good.
Yeah,
good.
Get it together.
I'm going to do that.
There are springs in one of those.
Uh-huh.
Several. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so all sorts of other things. We'll be back next week with another edition of Off the Hook at 7 p.m. and Overtime at 8 p.m. And, again, you can write to us, oth@2600.com, with your thoughts, criticisms, suggestions, whatnot. We always enjoy hearing from our listeners. Good night, everyone.